KFA ENF monitoring. KFA ENF.
This is KE8LQT. Loud and clear.
Thank you there, LQT. Testing out a brand new radio that showed up today. Trying to hit a couple of the repeaters in the area to see how well they sound.
Oh, yeah, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I'm here visiting. I'm from a place called The Villages of Florida. Brand new ham guy. He's a technician. And trying to show my son and daughter-in-law how much fun this is. So he's driving around to see how it's working and how it's hitting the repeaters. Sounds pretty strong. I'm just down here in... by the harbor, heading out towards Dillon's Chocolate.
Yeah, we spoke yesterday. Is it Matt, your name?
Hey, Bentley. Mark. M-A-R-C. All right.
Yeah, that's right. So, sounds like your little 5-watt HT is working pretty good for you around town.
Okay, so, as you see, the 5-watt, what it is?
Well, you described to me that your buddy handed you a little Baofeng, and most of those are 5 watts, unless you have one of the 8-watt or 10-watt units.
Oh, okay, yeah. For the money, I think it's 35 bucks, so it's 5. But, it's like, not enough. It's just how far I can go with it. I'm going to get 20 miles, maybe, to the nearest repeater.
Yeah, you're breaking up on me there, so you must be at the end of your range, but it's really it's line of sight dependent, particularly with those little radios, and if you are running the stock antenna on it as well, you can do a little bit better if you upgrade the antenna.
Oh, okay. I think
sorry, Mark, not able to read you there. You're breaking up pretty bad on me. Maybe listen up a little bit later and we can connect up then.
It sounds good. We can get coffee before I go back to Florida. I'm leaving, I think it's the 5th, but it's a pretty busy weekend here. But that would be great. But yeah, okay.
KF8ENF testing. KF8ENF monitoring. N8MJO mobile. KF8ENF, good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon.
Got myself a new radio in the mail today and just got it set up as a little present to myself for my technician's license. And actually just set up the crossband repeater function on it, and I'm sitting on my deck with my little 5-watt HT talking through it in the crossband function. So that's working pretty cool. You're my first contact to try it out on.
It's always fun to get new toys.
Yeah, huge learning curve on this thing too, man. I think the manual is like 335 pages long, so I got some more studying to do.
So what did you actually get?
5100?
The ICOM 5100, that's what I'm talking with right now. It's a good little radio.
Just playing around with some of the analog stuff. I have no idea what any of the D-Star stuff, how to work any of that. I've watched a couple of YouTube videos, but I'm going to have to like put that on the back burner to figure out another time and get through some of the basic stuff first.
Honestly, I've never used the digital side of this radio. It's always been the analog side. But, yeah, I actually at one point had it set up at my base station and was hitting repeaters 50, 60 miles away. So, got pretty good output. So, they say 50 watts. I'm trying to think what it was. I think I was seeing 48, 49 when I tested it, so close enough to spec for my what I want to use it for. So yeah, it's a good radio.
Yeah, that's good to hear. I do not have an antenna that's optimized for it, so my SWRs are a little bit high with the GMRS and MERS tuned antenna that I have, but I've got another one coming that will solve that problem.
Yeah, when I purchased mine, I paid, I think it was $20 or $30 for the MERS mod. Never used it, but I figured, hey, let's get it done. One thing I do like about this radio is I can tune in to the airports around, and I've got that in the scan, so I can hear what's going on in the sky along with the ham band. So. I'm an aviation buff, so it's a dual-purpose radio for me now.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I've got a little Baofeng 10-watt HT that's got the airband on it, and I tune into the Harbor Springs Airport, which is right down the road from me here, and listen to some of the traffic in and out of there. That could be kind of interesting sometimes.
Yeah, let's see here. So that frequency is also going to give you Sheboygan and also Charlevoix, and I believe Boyne City, they all use the same frequency. So, because I've actually had to take that one out of my scan because they're so active that it eats up a lot of the time. So, I stay on the Pelston and Chippewa up in the UP share frequencies on the aviation band. So, I just leave it on that because that's a little less active, especially this time of year with everybody flying north. So, cool.
Yeah, good stuff, man. Like I said, lots to figure out and just trying to work through some of the basic stuff before I get my feet too wet on some of the other stuff.
So how long ago did you get your license?
Just last Friday and got my license on Tuesday.
Wow, that was fast. I didn't know the government could move at that speed. So did you take both tests same day?
So I just took my technician's exam, and that's where I stopped. I did not try for the general. That's a little bit more involved, and I did not study for that.
I got those mixed up. I ended up taking both technical and the general. You should have tried. My father-in-law and I took the exam on the same day. He didn't study for the second one and missed it by 3 questions, which surprised him. And I'm like, you need to go back and get it, but he's never done that before. So there's a lot of overlap between the two. And then, yeah, there's a few additions, so that's probably what tripped him up. So, yeah, honestly, if you did good on the first exam, do a little studying. Get the next level.
Well, my GMRS buddy kind of scared me off of it. He said that that's exactly what he did, and he failed the general exam miserably. But, yeah, maybe I should have tried it. I only missed one question on my technician's exam, so maybe I'm selling myself short.
Well, you did better than me. I only missed three, and I was really bummed because when I was doing all the study exams, I was getting 100%. So, bummer, bummer. Well, hey, I'm pulling into home. I had to go to the hardware store to get a ice maker line for a brand new refrigerator for my wife. So just pulled in home. So I'll say 7-3. By the way, my name is Michael. I'm up here in Levering. I'm bouncing off the Mackinac City repeater right now. So, all right, I'll say 7-3s and catch you on the air once again someday. At 8, MJL.
Good chatting with you, Michael. Appreciate the call back. My name is Bentley. I'm in Harbor Springs, and I'm going through the Petoskey repeater right now. KF8ENF. Clear monitoring.
Bentley is still listening. KF8 something or other. W8RPM mobile.
Yeah, I'm here. KF8EFN.
Okay, the suffix is Echo Frank November, is that correct?
Negative, and I may have said it wrong. It's Echo November Frank.
Okay, got it. So I was eavesdropping earlier. I also was just pulling into the hardware store. So that's why I didn't jump in, but am I correct that you got your tech and your general at the same sitting?
I examined for my tech license. I did not try for the general.
Okay. Well, I echo your buddy's comments that, you know, you're there anyway. What do you got to lose? Even if you don't get it, you still, you know, you get exposure to what's on the test. And it's got to help with the fear factor for the following. I'm a VE as well, and I'll tell you what, I cannot even tell you how many times I've seen people come in and go from zero to extra in the same session. You know, just three tests right in a row, bang, bang, bang.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Yeah, if I would have thought about it a little bit more, maybe I would have tried, but. You know, I just had the one goal, and, you know, recovering from knee surgery, I started studying up on the exams, went through the service that coached me through it, took about 25 or 30 practice exams, and just decided to take the one only. But, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I should have tried for the next level at least.
Well, and, now is as good a time as any. You know, that stuff is... The basic theory and the rules and regs are still fresh in your mind, so there really is no better time than now to at least get the difference between tech and general in terms of privileges is just so dramatic, even, you know, far more so than that little bit extra bandwidth that you get from the extra. But, yeah, again, I know so many guys, a lot of really technical guys that could easily pass the extra, and they just, you know, they get hung on the tech and never go any further, and it's kind of a shame. You know, I mean, to each their own. There's plenty you can do as a tech, and even as a tech, you still get 10-meter privileges, so you got a, you know, limited bandwidth there, a 10-meter sideband, and no FM, but, you know, 10-meter sideband, and a little chunk of CW everywhere, but, yeah, I was eavesdropping on your aviation comments, too. I think that was, I'm not sure if that was you or the station you were talking to, but I listen to a lot of Unicom, too, just because I can. And I live very near a GA airport, so 122.8, 122.9, 134.6, you know. And, yeah, he's right. It's pretty busy, especially when no flying weather's nice.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Throw your call sign back at me again and tell me your name, please.
It's Ron, Robert Oscar November, and the call is Whiskey 8 Romeo Papa Mike.
All right, I'll make a note of that in my little log here and try to say hello to you by name next time that I hear you.
And my memory's not what it used to be. I'll either remember your call sign and not your name, or I'll remember your name and not your call sign, although I will be honest with you. My daughter and son-in-law had a wiener dog, and it shared your name, so odds are I'll remember your name.
Surprised at how often I get that.
That people share your name with a dog?
I hated when I was a kid, but I'll tell you what, throughout my professional career, being a salesman and an account manager, once you tell somebody your name, they tend not to forget it when it's Bentley.
Right, right. Not like John or Bob, so. All right, so if I remember our conversation from yesterday, you were saying you were in the natural gas industry. Was that on the supply side, on the distribution side?
Work for the local utility, DTE Energy. Been there for 35 years. And my job is to manage our largest industrial institutional accounts across the state. So I take care of all of our power plants that burn natural gas. I take care of paper mills, cement plants, wood processing facilities. It's been a great job, a great career, and I've really enjoyed it and learned a lot. Got into the technical sales piece of it. You know, back before all the craziness during COVID, it was very commonplace to do business with my customers face-to-face on a regular basis, and that always included rolling up my sleeves and getting into the plants and, you know, looking behind the doors and something more than the fifth grade class tour of the local industrial plant. Fascinating stuff, and I've really enjoyed
it. Yeah, I have, my brother was a DTE employee, worked down at the Warren Service Center. And I got a couple friends that retired from there and are now, ITC employees. One getting ready to retire from ITC. A bunch of techs over at ULG. I have my issues with the political side of the public utilities, both DTE and especially consumers. And then, you know, after dealing with the remnants of the ice storm, I got to say consumers just, their star shone brighter than I ever thought. But, you know, we were comparing it to these small electric co-ops that just didn't have the resources to keep up. And they're still recovering. Matter of fact, I just saw a notice online that there's a public meeting coming up where PIE gets to explain their $20 storm recovery charge on every PIE electric bill from now till probably forever.
You might be surprised to know that some of the employees of these larger utilities have some similar thoughts, I'm guessing, to yours about the political aspects of how they're being run. You know, I'm an old Michigan guy. Things were a lot different back then. I mean, we've always had this forced relationship with the state lawmakers, the Public Service Commission, and it's a dance that's been played. But it sure seems like in recent years it's taken a shift to a little bit more influence, and I'm not so sure I'm in big favor of the way that that's all coming down. And then your comments about, you know, the co-ops managing the ice storm, yeah, that was a little disappointing, not necessarily unexpected, though, given the resources they have available to them. Kind of disappointed some of the bigger utilities didn't.
Well, we recently, and by recently I mean within the last couple of years, we recently got natural gas where I'm at. We were exclusively propane prior to that, and like I said, I mean, I have family members that work for the public utilities. My other half worked for Consumers through college. Her mom retired from Consumers, managing the service side of the natural gas install facility down in Livonia. So, you know, I mean, I've had a little bit of exposure to it, not firsthand, but secondhand. And, yeah, this state is terrible, probably one of the worst, certainly the bottom five, in terms of government transparency. You know, the whole MPSC is just terribly political. They made it even more political when they dumped the zoning authority on them, which they're not, you know, they're a bunch of unelected bureaucrats. They're not accountable to the people. It's terrible. Consumers committed political homicide against a friend of mine who was an elected state rep downstate, and they threw $40 million at a campaign to make sure he was defeated. So, you know, and this is money that should be being spent on infrastructure. That's really my point. You know, you want to have a separate PAC or something to be able to be politically advocates, politically advocating for causes or even for your own best interests, you know. The best interests of those corporations are not always the best interests of the consumer. And then you get into the whole nuclear side and the fact that, you know, DTE sells energy wholesale outstate for cheaper than they sell it to their own customers. You know, it's a long, long story. And a lot of it's not good, especially compared to other states and how they manage it.
That's probably a 2 to 3 beer conversation, though, to get into the nuts and bolts of it. But, yeah, like I said, as someone who's been there for 35 years, I've seen a lot of changes. And I'll just say I'm looking forward to retirement. It's going to be a great place to be retired from.
Yep. Yep, I hear that. And you're probably getting out at a good time. But, you know, and that, too, you know, you sound young enough, you can probably go get a consultant gig or go, you know, work somewhere else and still be retired. You're probably too young for Social Security. But, yeah, it's just like downstate, you know, all those downstate counties, the places I grew up, you know, City of Detroit, Redford, Novi, you know, they're great places to be from. But I'm glad I'm not there now. My kid still lives in Wixom. Her kid lives in Southfield. So we're down there pretty regularly. We have some business dealings down there as well. But I'll tell you what, I'm glad I wasn't down there during COVID because I'd probably be in jail.
I graduated from Michigan State right around that time and landed herself a great job at a civil engineering firm and promptly picked up and moved down to the Canton area and worked out of the office that her employer has in Taylor. And, yeah, she's not real enamored with the area for a lot of different reasons. Can't say that I'm surprised, but she's moved back home for the summer, and she'll be moving to Florida in September for her job. So things are looking up for her, and she gets to be up here in northern Michigan for her summer, which is great.
W8RPM. My kid graduated from Central with a elementary education degree, the 5-year kind, and she did her student teaching both in Mount Pleasant and in Novi, and then taught in the public school system for 2 years, and didn't really like it, didn't fit in, didn't like the pressure from the teachers' unions, and now she works for Bosch. And she met her husband there, and he also works for Bosch, which I'm not super comfortable about that, you know, having too many eggs in one basket. But Bosch has never had a layoff, and the majority of their employees are lifers and retire from there. She's doing real well, climbing the corporate ladder faster than he is, which is creating a little bit of friction. But Canton's okay. There are still some very, very nice neighborhoods in Canton, especially the Sunflower Sub and in through there. But it is, you know, the whole of Wayne County, the southern end of Oakland County, the western end of Washtenaw County, the northern end of Monroe County. It's just one great big giant concrete slab, you know. And, I mean, there are some cultural differences, especially if you get into East Dearborn and Inkster and Taylor. But it's just one big, nasty, big, stinky city. And, again, you know, glad to be gone.
Identifying. Yeah, sure. So both my parents were downriver folks. My dad grew up in Taylor. My mom grew up in Wyandotte and went into the military and moved around the country. And my dad decided that was the last place he wanted to raise his family. So we settled over on the west side of the state in the Grand Rapids area, which is where I grew up. And what a wonderful place to be back then. Can't say I like the direction Grand Rapids is going in now, but I was fortunate to be able to move up here to Northern Michigan in 1996 for my job, and met a local girl here and married her, and we were able to raise a family here and just have a wonderful life. It's been great.
I grew up in Detroit proper. Warrendale, West Side, kind of, and I inherited my parents' house when they both passed away. From there, I moved to Redford. From Redford, I moved to Novi, and sold my Novi house kind of in the downturn, rented for a couple of years, Novi, Westland, lived with a buddy and I shared a house in Dearborn when he worked there, so. And we've been up here full-time since 17. Yeah, it's 8 years now. So, and this December of 16, and then April of 17 for me. We had two houses to get rid of down there. But, Harbor's, and I think you said you're in Harbor. Harbor's nice. It's a little pricey. A little pricier than some of the outlying areas, you know, the Leverings, the Grand Traverse Townships, there's more affordable areas, more open land, but Harbor and everywhere up here in the summer, every place from basically Gaylord North, maybe even Clare North, I mean there's nowhere else you'd want to be. And the Airbnb and the VRBO prices reflect it and confirm it.
Yeah, I hear you, man. I cringe every time I get that tax bill from Little Traverse Township. Whereabouts are you? Are you in the Petoskey area around here or somewhere else where I'm reaching you on this repeater?
Well, you got to remember that this repeater's, I think you're on the 1-9. The other guy was on the 1-1. I'm on the 7-4. I'm in southern Sheboygan County, not too far off the freeway and not too far from the Otsego County line.
Oh, yeah, I got you. The state forest over there is one of my favorite stomping grounds. Done a lot of bird hunting and a little bit of fishing over that way.
Yeah, there's a lot of nature preserves and state forest campground not far from me at all at... begins with an H. I can never remember the name of it. Hackwood, Harwood, something like that. It's right on the Sturgeon. So, and I popped in yesterday. I'm not sure if I talked to you or if I talked to the guy that I was talking to, but you were talking about these, the repeaters and how this all works. And many, many repeaters are, completely privately owned. They don't have any public affiliation, don't use any public facilities, public money, anything like that. The 519 that I believe you're on, that's on a Emmett County-owned tower managed by the CCE Dispatch Authority, at least for now. The tower I'm on, the 674 on Hackleberg Road, owned by Sheboygan County. Those used to be commercial sites for their public safety before they went to the statewide system. So now everybody's on the MPSCS, and those sites are different. They're not using, I can't speak for the 1-9. I know they're not, they have totally abandoned the 674, and they're using different sites in the county. to give them the 800 meg coverage. So there's a group, there's a repeater group downstate, and it's funny because, you know, you being a DTE employee, I've got three repeaters on the roof of the DTE building down there. I've been up there many, many times. The DTE Radio Club, which kind of disappeared when the old guys started dying off and retiring. There's a group of what was 10 of us, now I believe it's 13. We went out, formed a corporation, got the league insurance, did all the legal stuff, and we now manage about 13 repeaters down in the Tri-County area. And like I said, the 533, the 3.375, and there's one more. It's on the roof of DTE.
Oh, wow. So, yeah, you were neck deep in all of this stuff. I will say this, though. Being a gas guy from the old Nishcon days, we got purchased by Detroit Edison 2000, 2001, and we were really surprised to learn about all of the perks that they had. You know, like you talked about the Radio Club and the Edison Boat Club and some of those facilities they had down there. All of that stuff really went away over the last several years. And as gas employees, we were never really allowed to come in. You know, kind of like the movie Caddyshack. You know, you can use the pool between the hours of 12:15 and 12:25. Have fun.
That's funny you say that. My brother had his boat there in the mouth of the Raisin at the coal plant. I've been in that marina many times, many years ago, but back when he was still working for them. Yes, lots of perks. And then my buddy Larry, who retired out of the Warren Service Center there at Warren and Livernois, his daughter, who is one of my exes, by the way, she's a current ITC employee. So, yeah, I've kind of had my finger in it for a long time. I mean, I was licensed in 77. I wasn't even out of high school yet. And, I've been around. It's not necessarily a good thing, but, you know, the only reason I went and got my... went and got my extra Bentley is so my other half wouldn't beat me to it. She went and took her tech after she started hanging around with me back around 2011 or so, 2012, and she took her general cold, and I think she missed it by one. And then she's one of those people that hasn't gone back. You know, that's kind of who I was talking about. But I was bound and determined to get my extra before her, so I did.
Step ahead. I don't think I have any danger of that. My wife is not interested in this whatsoever, and just kind of rolls her eyes whenever I'm into it. So it's okay though.
Wait till you put that 100-foot tower up. You think she rolls her eyes now?
On my roof, just putting up my little Ed Fong J-pole.
Are you in an HOA?
The Spain HOA that has a very short list of rules and a bunch of people that are very reasonable and, you know, don't raise a lot of stink. I think our association is 17 units, 15 of them are built on, and everybody here is very cool, so we don't have issues like that.
Yeah, that's good. That's very good. When I lived in Nova, I was in a single-family house, but in a subdivision, we had an HOA. And the HOA had a no-antenna rule, so I became the Architectural Control Committee. And by the time I moved out of that house, I had 7 sticks, 2 wires, and 5 dishes.
I put my time in as the president and the secretary and served on the Architectural Control Committee and, you know, made a couple of changes, looked the other way on a few other things, and I think that's the way it ought to go. But I also didn't push it too hard either. I mean, I've got a chase on my house that has a fake fireplace vent on it, and I hid my antenna pretty well, and it sticks up a couple of feet, and unless you're looking for it real hard, you wouldn't even know it's there.
Yeah, I lived in a ranch house, so I didn't have a lot of slant to the roof, but I was able to mount a lot of things on the back that if you were standing at the street, you either didn't see them at all or you just saw the tops. So, you know, I didn't have a lot of elevation, but, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. I will tell you, if you get a general and you want to get an HF radio going, I am a big fan, and not that I've ever owned one, but I know of where several are up and operating right now. I got a real good friend that's down in the Adrian area, and he's on 10 acres. But he put up one of those 43-foot flagpole antennas and did it the right way, you know, with all the buried radials and followed all the directions about how far it needs to be from the house and what kind of coax you got to feed it with and all this other stuff. And, Mike, and it's a flagpole. It looks like a 43-foot flagpole in his backyard. And, man, that thing works. Oh, my goodness, does that thing work. You know, he's got a pretty extensive station. I think he's got an MP2000, maybe. It's one of the top-of-the-line older Yaesus, older now, wasn't older then. And, you know, a full legal limit amp, and that just talks all over the place. Now, being out in the sticks probably helps, and the fact that he's got, you know, virtually zero noise. But, you know, like I said, there's a will, there's a way. You don't have to be gaudy. You don't have to spend a ton of money. You can get on the air on practically any band, even 160, and, you know, you can do it in a way that mitigates the impact both visually and legally.
KF80ENF. Yeah, so I had a little bit of interest in some HF stuff, so that's definitely something I'd like to get into and buy a dedicated radio. I was thinking about experimenting with the 10-meter band with my new ticket, and thought maybe I would just build myself a simple little dipole and hoist it up in a tree just outside my shack, which is between a couple of houses, and I've got a nice little strip of woods in between. Nobody would even see it or know it was there, and just give it a try and see what I might be able to do with it. It's intriguing.
I've got a buddy here, a little close to me. He's about 10 years older than me, and he just got his ticket like a year ago. He's a Kilo Echo 8 Bravo call sign, and he's like a kid in a candy store. You know, he got his tech totally on his own. His son is a tech that lives downstate, but he got his tech totally on his own. No Elmer, no real help, self-study. Went up to the swamp in Knobbinway and took the test in person and passed it. And then I happened to run across him. We've got some mutual friends and stuff. And I ran into him on the air, and I wasn't even aware he was licensed. And we got to talking, and he came over and looked at my HF stuff. I actually loaned him my 940 for him to just listen on. And long story short, you know, he's already got his general. I'm sure he'll have his extra quick because he's a real quick study. Retired career Navy guy, so he's got quite the brain. But he built what started out as a 10-meter dipole, put it on the roof of his garage, and then we talked about fan dipoles and multi-element. So now it's 10, 15, and 20, and it's hanging on the roof of his garage. He can't even see it. You know, it started out being about 18 feet long. Now with the two other elements, you know, it's maybe, I don't know, maybe 35, 40 feet total. But it's very stealth. It's very low profile, and it works like gangbusters. He's working all over the world. He went out and bought himself a little ICOM 718. Which is kind of an entry level. It's a no bells, no frills kind of basic rig, and he's just having a blast. You know, I bought the thing brand new for, I don't know, $600, $650, something like that. Got his little tri-band fan dipole fed with coax, which is a mistake, by the way, below 30 megahertz. Ladder line's the only way to go, but he's having a blast.
Looking at that ICOM 7100, they refer to it as a shack in a box, and you know, something like that might be an upgrade down the road. Maybe I'll take this 5100 that I've got and stick it in the vehicle and upgrade down the road when I decide to get a little bit more serious about HF.
I think the one everybody wants now is the 7300. I don't have any first-hand experience with either. But there's lots of ways to go. You know, when I was first getting into HF, I bought an FT-847 brand new, which is, you know, was a kind of a shack in the box back then in the early 80s, mid 80s. VHF, UHF all mode, 6 meter, and then HF 100 watts. And it was great. It did what I wanted. I used it more for V and U and some 2 meter sideband kind of stuff. And I thought it was okay on HF until I inherited a 940 from somebody. And I put the 940 next to the 847, and I immediately sold the 847. So, you know, you will, it's like cars and girlfriends, you know, you never keep your first one.
Truth. I'm seeing that already, just getting my feet wet on this stuff and having gone through a bunch of iterations on the GMRS stuff for the last couple of years, that it's definitely, there's mission creep involved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt. But there's, you know, and I've regretted selling a number of rigs that I sold. But at the time, it seemed like the right thing to do because I was poor, and the only way to afford the next one is to sell the current one. And I did that. I went through that same exercise with cars and guns and wives. And, you know, they say age brings wisdom. I'm not so sure.
Brother, I've got probably way too many of those, but I don't think you can have too many. Sold off a bunch of Safe Queens a few years ago, and, of course, what did I do with the proceeds from that? Bought more.
Yeah, well, that's the point, you know. He who dies with the most toys. Anyway, all right, Bentley, I'm going to let you run. I made my hardware store run. I've been sitting here in the driveway talking to you. I just realized I had left somebody on UHF earlier today and said, yeah, I'll turn the HT on when I get in the house. And I went in the house and took a nap. Left him hanging, but he's an understanding guy. So, all right, well, we will run into you. You know, there's a Petoskey Radio Club. I don't know if you're familiar. I happen to belong to the Gaylord Club at the moment. I'm not very active with them, just because I always had schedule conflicts with their meeting because I had another obligation, but that's since ended. So I'm going to try to make it to the Gaylord Club, and you're more than welcome to tag along. It's the second Tuesday of the month. Good bunch of guys down there, too. And there's also, there's a Nary's Racies group, based out of Sheboygan for Sheboygan County. You're in Emmett County, but still, you know, a lot of the same guys. Anyway, we'll see you down the page. Do you have, you got an Ed Fong, is that a dual band ladder line, one of those in the PVC, right? Am I thinking right?
It's the version that's tuned for the commercial bands MERS and GMRS and has been fantastic, but I just, I'm not super happy with the SWR readings I'm getting on it with the 2 meter and 70 centimeter frequencies. So I just bought a replacement for it that is tuned for the ham frequencies and hoping to have some good improvement with that.
Okay, very good. Well, remember, antennas are easy and cheap to build. It's a great learning curve. It's good experiments. And, you know, commercial stuff is great, but there's no reason why you can't use the same antenna for the high end of the UHF ham band and GMRS. I mean, you know, most of the exposed dipole antennas are, many of them are 400 to 480 or 440 to 480. You know, you can get them cut for a specific frequency, but because the element size is so small, there's a lot of margin for error in there. And if you have something cut for 462, you know, it's probably going to be more than usable at 448, 449 transmit, but that's a whole other story. You're talking about SWR, it tells me you must have at least a meter, an analyzer, or something. And, you know, we need to have the talk about quality of coax once you get above 400 meg. So it's got to be, you know, LMR 400 or better, because otherwise all your signals lost before it gets to the antenna. And GMRS is yet another discussion. So, all right, we'll talk to you later, sir. I'm happy to fill your head with 48 years worth of ham crap, like a fire hose, whether you want it or not.
The time, I sure appreciate it helping me to get my feet a little bit wetter here, and look forward to catching you on the air another time. KF8ENF, clear and monitoring.
73W8RPM.
KF8ENF calling KE8ZAT. Chris, how do you read?
KE8ZAT. That's pretty good. Your audio is a little low, but 100% quieting, super clear.
Yeah, same on this end. You're a little quieter over here than the other channel.
You know, I got thinking on the WHCQS. Do you have an input and an output tone on yours?
No, I just have an input tone on that one.
Okay, that must be the problem, because I know I have an N code and D code PL on mine, so I'll have to take that D code one off. I mean, that's the problem.
All right, well, we got a couple of options here. We got comms between us. That's all good. So a little disappointed in the simplex not working between us tonight, but we'll have to explore that a little bit more.
Agreed. And I think it's it's a height issue there again. You know, because we kind of have the same thing with GMRS a little bit. You know, the repeaters we can deal with real well, but the simplex, even, you know, as we, different times we were driving out here, the train just gets us so we don't have that couple 300 feet in the air.
Yeah, you're going real quiet on me again, but yeah, got the meaning across. Why don't we go back to our other channel we were talking on, the BEL.
Copy that. Clear.
KFADNF, clear.
NADMH mobile.
NADMH. NADMH. NADMH testing.
Test 1-2.